Hello, wrestling fans, and welcome to episode 220 of the We Can't Wrestle podcast. Nate Maxson, your host here with you, and it is the Brothers Maxson this week, as I am joined, of course, by my brother Aaron.
Hello, everybody.
And we are going to continue our journey this week through the PWI 500 from 1994. I always enjoy going through these 500s. You get to talk about the names. We try when we talk about it to talk about what they were doing in that time frame. But, you know, with some people, you get off on their career and that's fine. It's our show, right? We set the parameters so we can break them if we want to.
Yes.
But last week we left off at 248. It was, if you remember, it was zone manager Ron Cumberledge. And I actually just got done today listening to, I put it up over a week ago, but I just got done today getting to actually listen to the completed product. That was a funny conversation at the end of last week's show if you're a retail guy, because if you are, go back. If you are a retail person and you haven't listened to the last, well, first of all, what do you listen to this one for? Go back and listen from the beginning. But it was great conversation about district manager or zone manager Ron Cumberledge. And again, this is 1994. And here we go. Unless you had anything you want to discuss, Aaron, we'll just dive into it. We'll get right into it.
Unless you want to talk about Jade Cargill.
Yeah, not really.
Okay.
We are finally in that back half of the countdown at 247 in the 1994 PWI 500 is Tiger Mask. 5'6", 220, 20 years pro, the most popular Japanese wrestler ever in Mexico, tremendously influential in developing aerial wrestling, ended 9-year retirement in the spring, was somewhat competitive, held the NWA WWF Junior Heavyweight Championships simultaneously at one point in his career. Tiger Mask, still wrestling in 94.
Go ahead, sorry.
Has somebody new got the mask on at this point?
That's what I'm trying to look up. I can't remember.
What is it? Sayama? Is that his name? The original Tiger Mask?
Yeah.
And then I have another question that's kind of a... I'll ask it, and you can tell me what you think about... Because I don't necessarily know what was going on with Tiger Mask in 1994, so we don't really have to dig into that. But I actually had a question that this brought up to me. Do you think, because it says here, most popular Japanese wrestler ever in Mexico. Do you think that Ultimo Dragon ever surpassed Tiger Mask in that respect or got super close?
I would say, I don't know if he got, I'm not like, you know, going to sit around and say I'm some kind of expert or whatever, but I'd say he's maybe not more popular, but he's more influential.
Mm-hmm.
Because he went there. It's funny because a lot of guys go, like a lot of Japanese guys go places because they send them there. You know what I mean? Because they want right. them to get the experience or whatever, like their excursions. He went there because Japan said they didn't want him.
Mm-hmm. And then he fucking threw it in their face.
But they said he was too small and nobody'd ever like him and yada, yada, yada. And then he was like, fine, fuck it. And he went to Mexico and just ruled. And then Japan wanted him back. And he was, for a long time, he was like, why would I go back? Like,
yeah,
I'm one of the key guys here. You know what I mean?
Yep, I'm like, figured in.
So that's where I'd say, because, and there's a lot of guys that, there's a lot of luchadors that he trained and shit like that. So I'd say, if anything, he's more, you know, like you said, influential or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Number 246 is Super Delphin. 5'7", 175 years pro. Went 7-3 in the recent junior heavyweight tournament, losing in the finals to Jushin Liger, exceptionally quick with an explosive DDT, top rival of the great Sasuke. Victims include Eddie Guerrero. I have seen some Super Delphin matches in watching like Jushin Liger matches and such, but I don't know a whole lot about him other than that, other than the stuff I've seen when I'm watching him wrestle people I want to watch wrestle, I guess is the...
Yeah, I don't know a lot about him either.
245. Oof. Still in 94. A Mongolian Stomper. 6'2", 235, 31 years pro, a Southern wrestling institution, former Rule Breaker, now beloved, unpredictable fan favorite, Southern States wrestling heavyweight champion, despite his age, based in Knoxville, Tennessee, often travels to nearby cards by bicycle. that's great.
So, Mongolian Stomper.
Why do I picture Mongolian Stomper with a bicycle like Debo? Like, it's my bike now.
I know a lot of people like the guy and everything like that, and it might just be because it's a different time, but he's just a guy that I never... You ever see like those guys and you're just like, I don't get it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
And not like... Not saying, oh, he's trash or whatever. He's just a guy. When I see it, I just don't get it.
Yeah, and sometimes it is a generational thing. Like, I will hear guys that were pro wrestling fans in the 70s, or you hear Cornette talk about people like from his territory when he was younger and how great they were, and then you watch him and that, not for me, or like guys that were New York guys and lived in the 70s, and they talk about fucking Killer Kowalski, and then I watch Killer Kowalski, yeah. and not taking anything away from it.
He's boring. This guy's boring.
But the industry in that area of that of the country during that time had a different pace. The punching and kicking was that was their flavor, you know. So yeah. he worked in his time and his territory, and that's great. But yeah, I don't know a whole lot about Mongolian Stomper. I know a lot because with me, a lot of the Southern stuff that I watch, to be honest, I love Memphis, but a lot of the stuff that I watch from Memphis or Tennessee or whatever is from like, say, like 1983 on. So I haven't seen a whole lot of Mongolian Stomper in my day.
Yeah. Koji Kanemoto. I don't know why it took me so long to figure it out. That was the Tiger Mask that we were just talking about.
Okay.
Because I was like, it wasn't Misawa, because Misawa I actually care about, or I shouldn't say care about, know about, you know, and he was the second one. So, yeah. And yeah, that's kind of like one of those gimmicks where, I don't know, like, they were talking, like, how do I say it, like, Since it's in the mask, it's like a lifetime thing. It's kind of like Jushin Liger. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Liger never was old, never seemed like he was old because you never saw him. You know what I mean? Like, saw his face or whatever. But anyway, back to Stomper. That was bugging me. That's why I had to look it up. But yeah, I don't get it. And I don't see it.
It's a different era. Okay, number 244. Talking about punching and kicking and not much of a technical wrestler. 9-1-1, 6-7-3-10, 1 year pro, brought into ECW by manager Paul E. Dangerously as Sabu's personal handler. Now, more than just a bodyguard, awesome choke slam. Rumors persist that he and Mr. Hughes may soon be feuding. And as we know from reliving the extreme, they do. And there's 9-1-1 at 244. At 244 on the PWI 500 in 1994.
For what he was, it worked. And his downfall was, like you said, we've been watching Reliving the Extreme and everything. When did 911 stop being interesting?
The minute he left ECW.
No, even in ECW. When did people want to, like... When did it start becoming, I don't want to see 911? Oh. When the guy decided he wanted to wrestle.
Yeah, when the, like Pritchard says, and then the bell rang.
Okay. Well, before it's like, because Todd Gordon even talks about it in his book. He's like, I could have had that guy choke slamming people forever. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it was perfect how it was. He goes in there, choke slams either the guy that the crowd wants to boo, because like we were talking about, you know, they'd give guys shitty gimmicks so the fans could participate and boo them. And so they can, then we send 911 out to choke slam him. It's like Rocky Horror Picture Show. You know what I mean? It's the same thing every month, but people like to interact and participate in it. Or it's like, oh, this guy's a shit heel. All right, let's just have 911 go out there and choke slam him.
Yeah.
But then Todd said that 911 was like, I think I should start having competitive matches or whatever. And it's like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
No, you should not. And he was really persistent about it. And Todd said he was a nice guy. And he had always just done everything that he was asked to do. So he was like, all right. And then he He's did like, it. And the fans were like,
did you see the? It's like, did you see the career trajectory of Virgil when he left the Million Dollar Man?
Yeah.
Number 243 is Jamie Dundee, 5'8", 195, 3 years pro, one half of the USWA Tag Champs with Wolfie D, known as PG-13, son of the legendary Bill Dundee, wrestled women's champ Miss Texas last year, who of course is Jackie, and a Memphis mainstay. We talked about these guys a little bit last week.
Crazy motherfucker, man. Entertaining, yeah. But he is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, he's one of those guys that's like, I don't know if I can't say that he's necessarily done a lot of illegal shit, but I'm assuming Jamie Dundee's done a lot of illegal shit.
Yeah, his shoot interview stuff, he's fucking wild. He's fucking wild.
Yeah. Like, to me, he seems like he would be I've been watching Breaking Bad again. I know you watch Breaking Bad, right?
Yeah.
Like, he seems like he'd be a character that would be in, like, Jesse Pinkman's group. Like, he's that kind of, like, style of person, you know what I mean? Like, the underbelly of society. Just, yeah.
And I liked PG-13. I liked PG-13 as a tag team. And I know we discussed a little bit last week, but I enjoyed them as a team. They were good. I don't want to say this. They served their purpose properly in every promotion they were in. Like in the USWA, being tag team champions and being like lead heels around the territory was a good spot for them. They come to the WWF. They were never going to be on that level, but they were good in the level that they were at. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they were good little shit start, like little shit heels. And none of those Nation guys should have been like, you know, at the time bumping around for Ahmed like they did. You know, it's like you need to keep Crush and Savio and Farouk strong, but people want to see Ahmed drive somebody through a table. You know what I mean? You do that to Savio twice. Who gives a shit after that, you know, about Savio? It's like, oh, it's just a guy that I'm going to put through the table every week.
Right.
But you can just send these little guys and have them go out there and have them do it. And then they let D'Lo do it for a little bit because he was a bigger guy that it would look believable on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just they everywhere they went, they served their purpose and they were always entertaining. They were in ECW for a little bit and they were fun there. It's like, yeah. I got no problem with them.
Number 242 is in my brain, in my kid brain, one of the ten job guys that I remember seeing on TV every week. Dusty Wolf, 5'10", 230, 7 years pro, formerly in WWC, now wrestles around the globe, including India and South Africa. Intelligent veteran of many federations, competed as Dale Wolf in the WWF. I remember Dale Wolf being currently in the ring many, many times during my childhood.
And he was a guy like was never going to be the top of the territory, but he was also a guy that just was fundamentally sound and was a good little worker in the ring and knew his part and turned what could have been like, you know, a 2-year career and then back to the Jiffy Lube into this guy worked with everybody. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't say he's just like a renowned job guy or enhancement guy is like, you know, like a George South or a Barry Horowitz or anything, but he deserves to be on that list.
Mm-hmm.
And Remember what we used to call them before when we were kids and we didn't know, like, oh, they call these guys jobbers or what,
He
what
was
we or carpenters.
one of our favorite nobodies.
Yeah, it's like, oh, look at this nobody.
So that's what Aaron and I used to call the jobbers when we were kids. Jimmy Snook is wrestling that nobody.
Yeah, he's wrestling that nobody in there. So insulting.
Sorry, we're Dwayne Gill. Nobody.
Like 6-11, and we're like, there's nobody in here.
Oh shit!
I also remember when Little Nate figured out wrestling. Do you remember this?
I don't think so.
We were watching WCW Saturday. This is our little brother. He were watching WCW Saturday Night, and I forget who the match was, but the first guy came out, and he looked at us and he's like, "That guy's gonna lose." We're like, I was like, why? He goes, that guy's going to lose. And I was like, how do you know? He goes, the guy that comes out first on this show always loses. And I'm like, you're right, because that's the lesser of the talent. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
This is Ronnie Rage coming out to fight Scott Hall or whatever. It's like, yeah, that guy's going to lose.
You're right. Other than the last match.
Yeah, you figured it out, buddy.
Number 241 is Mohammed Hussein. 5'11", 260, 10 years pro. WWC rule breaker. Notorious for throwing fireballs. Is currently feuding with Lale. Okay. Has been on several champion tag teams in the Federation. Has competed in Memphis, WCW, ICW, and Japan.
I don't remember him.
I don't either. And you would think... I'm actually going to look him up because I bet I see him. And I'm like, oh, it's that guy.
At first when he said it, I was like, no way. Because I thought it was like that one dude from WCCW back in like the early 80s. And I'm like, that can't be that guy.
Let's see here. No, I don't recognize him.
Yeah, I don't know him.
I mean, there's a picture of him here with Downtown Bruno and stuff, like as his manager, but I don't recognize him. So
yeah,
anyway,
that guy is.
Number 240 is Joe Sivoldi, 6'2", 14 years pro, has been respected along the Eastern Independent Circuit for years. A career scientific wrestler, son of former NWA Junior Heavyweight Champion Angelo Sivoldi. Former IWCCW light heavyweight champion.
I mean, their promotion wasn't the greatest promotion in the world, but I mean,
they lasted forever.
For their little area, they did the smart thing that independent wrestling promoters should do. And guess what that is?
Just fucking stay in your lane.
Let's entertain our audience, and let's not try to get too big.
And I'm going to tell you this right now. I don't mean to cut you off.
That's okay.
But you know what? Like, is an underrated run in independent, in like non-WWF, WCW wrestling. And it was honestly the most, and I'm not trying to shit on the guy, but it was honestly the most coherent and okay, anyway. A good little run is in the IWCCW or ICW, wherever the fuck it was called at the time, in the early 90s, when Tony Atlas was a heel.
Yeah.
In that company, because they'd bring people in like Tito or somebody. I mean, he just did, to me, he did great work as heel Tony Atlas in that little promotion. And like, he owned that shit. And he did a great job.
And he knew everybody, so it's like, yeah, Atlas, Tony says it's cool. Tony says these guys are cool. Let's go to them, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Sometimes I'll put that. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say about the whole, and I know we're talking about this, but like, like in our area. I mean, that's like that Tom guy over in Lima. He's still running shows and shit because he just stayed in his lane. Don't overproduce. Don't try to put out what you can't put out. Yeah, like he stopped bringing in bigger guys so much just because it was like I'd rather put on good solid shows, because I heard him talk about it. He's like, I'd rather put on good solid shows and get everybody paid than just spend all my money and lose everything because I brought in Jerry Lawler. You know what I mean?
That's what I was gonna say. And the people that come to his shows in the Lima area know who those guys on his shows are.
Yeah.
And those are their wrestlers, you know, that becomes their like their own little federation. Those are their talent, their guys that they like.
Yeah. So I think sometimes that gets shit on a lot. You know, little promotions. Like, yeah, the guy's making a little bit of money. He's doing what he wants to do, and nothing wrong with that.
Yep. Number 239 is Kevin Von Erich, 6'2", 235, 16 years pro, infrequently wrestles on independent cards, lone survivor of the ill-fated Von Erich brothers, and has had to cope with countless tragedies. Excellent claw hold, always a tenacious competitor. You know, Kevin Von Erich is a guy, I got to give it to him, how he stayed together mentally over all the years.
Yeah.
He dealt with a lot of fucking dark, I mean, just dark shit, man.
Yeah. And it's just, I don't want to say, maybe... Maybe sometimes being a little aloof is a good thing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
All shucks attitude of it, just like, well, that happens. And after it happens a bunch, it's just like, well,
yeah, it's been a tough road to hoe.
I mean, everybody's brother doesn't shoot themselves. I thought that was the thing. Like, you know what I mean? But not making light of it. But I'm just saying. Like, after a while, you just become numb to it, I would think. Just be like, well, whatever. Which I didn't even think about him. Yeah, I didn't even think about him being active in 94. So, I don't know.
I think by 94, he was probably, like, you know, after World Class died off, there were so many different, like, federations that tried to revive that territory and tried to do the sportatorium and that, like Gary Hart had a promotion. There was a new WCCW. There was like a Wild Wrestling of Texas. There was the GWF. I think he would come in and work those promotions sometimes, you know, to give him a little boost or whatever. But he wasn't by no means working full time at this point.
Well, I tried to watch that movie and I did not like it.
I have not watched it yet.
I didn't even get through all of it. I'm like, I'm turning this off. But anyway, go ahead.
So is it like the Jesse Ventura movie bad? Or?
I mean, it just, and maybe it's because it was a little later at night or whatever. I might give it another chance. But it just seemed like it was just choppy and kind of like, I don't know, revisionist storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am planning on watch, because sometimes I try to go into like if they make a major motion picture, and I was joking about the Jesse Ventura movie. For those of you that don't know, there was a terrible movie about Jesse Ventura on network television back like in the 90s when he was the governor of
the
Minnesota.
Jesse Ventura even told people don't watch that movie.
Yeah, but not that kind of a movie. But like when they do a movie about wrestling and it's like going to be put out for mass consumption, I try not to watch it as a wrestling fan. You know what I mean?
No, I do the same thing, but I was just also like watching this and I'm like, oh my goodness. I don't know if I can do this. And like I said, it was late and I was like kind of deep in beer time, so I was like, maybe I'll watch it with fresher eyes. But right now, like I'm looking at it and I'm like, Zac Efron's huge, okay, like he's massive, like I give the dude a bunch of credit because he got in fucking phenomenal shape for the movie and he plays Kevin, but like Kevin's better, like Zac Efron was better than the guy playing Carrie.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. No. Like, no fucking way.
That is not good Von Erich math. Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't work. But anyway.
Number 238 is Sergeant Slaughter, 6'3", 310, 17 years pro, former WWF World Champion and Marine drill instructor, recently returned to the Federation, feuding with Pierre, switched loyalties to Iraq during the Persian Gulf War, now a fan favorite again, exceptional clothesline. So if Sergeant Slaughter returned to the WWF in 1994 and feuded with Pierre, it was all on house shows. Because that was, believe me, Aaron can tell you folks, I'm a WWF 90s expert, and none of that ever took place on TV.
Yeah, he came back and
Slaughter was never, he was never an on-air character in 94, and he never feuded with Pierre on television in 94.
No, that's him being a working agent, I guarantee.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you'd read about, because George Steele would do the same thing sometimes, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
he'd do a couple house shows every once in a while, just like, say, oh, George Steele's going to be in, like, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, or whatever.
Yeah, George Steele versus the Mountie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or George Steele versus this guy. That's what Slaughter was doing.
What a fucking talent.
Bob Slaughter, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think he gets talked about enough for being mm-hmm. as good as he was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and he could do whatever you wanted him to do. He's a big guy, but he could move, and just I think he was awesome.
I agree. 237, Don Harris.
I wish we got a chic tugboat, but that's okay. What are we gonna call him? Chic tugboat.
Yeah, it's like we're not even gonna be creative about it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's boy. You know what? When you watch it with hindsight, knowing the story, like knowing that they were planning on turning him on Hogan, in hindsight, when you watch like the summer of 90 into like the fall of 90, and then even up until pretty much Slaughter becomes the Iraqi sympathizer, you can see little things they do where they were starting to hint toward his heel turn on Hogan. And then even after Hogan wins the belt from Slaughter at WrestleMania 7, you can see that they were toying with the idea of turning him, even if it wasn't going to be Sheik Tugboat, of turning him on Hogan. And then they nixed it, and they just went into putting him – they turned him heel, but they wound up just turning him heel on the Bushwhackers with the Earthquake. But,
yeah.
Like, now – I didn't notice it before, I guess. I wasn't paying that close attention. But if you go back and watch it now, hindsight, knowing the story, you can see times where they were hinting at the heel turn by Tugboat.
Yeah. And like I said, I think it would have been – I think we got the better outcome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's better that Slaughter did it, but
237, Don Harris, 6'4", 260, 6 years pro. He and twin brother Ron comprise the Bruise Brothers, former Smoky Mountain Tag Team Champions, now compete in ECW, as strong as his size would indicate. The Harris Brothers.
Well, nothing for him. I don't like those guys.
Same. 236, Haystacks Calhoun Jr., 6'4", 526 pounds, 4 years pro, has won the Florida Wrestling Alliance title, claims to be the son of you-know-who. Whether or not that's the case, he's nowhere as good a wrestler. Jesus Christ.
How bad are you?
Sorry, man. My reaction was probably like a little dramatic, but I'm like, holy fuck.
Yeah. Nobody ever's been like, I'll tell you what, he ain't no haystack cone in there. I'll tell you that much.
It's like, hey, Staff Calhoun is Lou Thez compared to this fella. I promise you this wasn't Haystacks Calhoun's son, folks. That's got to be one of the best. That's got to be one of the best burns in pro wrestling magazine history.
Yeah. And like when you're told you're not as good as the guy that Fred Blassie in his book said, it was the most disgusting human being I've ever seen in my life. Like just horrible. And Blassie said that this guy's supposed dad would always have a little dog with him and his wife, and they'd leave the dog, the little dog, in the truck. So it'd just be like, yip, 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 yip. And like the windows would be down or whatever, like cracked, so he couldn't get out. But it wasn't just in a car with the windows all the way up and everything. Right. So Blassie said one day he threw like a bunch of laxatives like in the window. Like three or four of them, and the dog like ate all of them and then just shit all over the cabin, Haystack's cabin, and his truck. And he's like, and there wasn't that, like, they walked out and there was nothing they could do, so they just got in it and drove. Oh, he's like, I hated that motherfucker.
You know what? Once I finish up the book I'm reading, I gotta go back and read the Blassie book again.
It's my second favorite wrestling book. Love it.
Number 235.
Brett's my first. Well, I'd say Mick's first one's my favorite one.
See, I'm kind of with you. I have a hard time deciding if Mick's first one or Brett's are my favorite, but they're definitely up there. Like, I can't decide what's number one.
And the only reason I say Mix is because he's a little less, how do I want to say, he's a little less full of himself in that book than Brett is in his book.
Mm-hmm. Regal's book's really good too.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, 235, Vampire Warrior, 6'3", 256, 6 years pro. Mysterious fanged rule breaker, wrestles in Florida Independence in Japan. Close friend of Luna Vachon. Beat Jeff Jarrett for the USWA Southern title, excuse me, in 1993. Still on the upswing. And of course, everybody knows that is Gangrel. And Gangrel. No, I was going to say Gangrel, I think, kind of got the shaft.
He did. I was going to say. I liked him too, and that was supposed to be a vehicle for him, that Brood deal.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he got the misfortune of being put with two guys that were just better than him.
Prodigies. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, and he wasn't bad.
Not at all.
You put that guy in a company that's being ran by Vince McMahon and stand him in between Edge and Christian. Who do you think Vince McMahon's going to think is like,
how about this? How about I'll say this? Okay, so Gangrel came into the WWF in 1998, right? We're rolling with the Attitude Era. Gangrel would have done much better coming into the WWF right here in 1994.
Yeah.
Gimmicks. You know what I mean? And he could have stood out because I'm not taking anything away from like your, because the WWF in 1994 and 1995, it was a big drop off from your big stars to your not big stars. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it was more of a gimmicky. I mean, there's no gimmicks, but that was like a very gimmicky heavy time.
So I think he probably would have had more success at this point and then could have rolled into the Attitude Era and doing something different, you know, established.
Yeah. Like I said, I just think he got put with those guys and those guys were better than him. And it was like, well, we got to break this shit up and get these guys going. And then I think one time that they say like he was having a match and is like, shirt popped open or whatever, his big belly fell out.
That was it. I think. Yeah. And Vince saw it.
And Vince was like, whoa, roly poly oly over here. You know? So yeah, he was done a bad hand.
Number 234 is Dan Davis, 5'9", 218, 17 years pro, current CWA light heavyweight champion, KG veteran, favorite move is Japanese armbar. This Dan Davis won a title in global, but is not the same wrestler who's currently competing there. Yeah, there are two Dan Davises.
Like three of them, because there's also Danny.
Yeah. I think this Dan Davis was the guy. Was this Dan Davis the guy that was like the Viper or something in global?
Probably. He was like,
because he kind of resembled Jake Roberts. He kind of resembled Jake Roberts, so they called him the Viper.
And he's like, don't hiss me off.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
I think that's this guy.
So bad.
233 is, I'm not even going to read the description. We already talked about the Harris brothers. 233 is Ron Harris. 232, Giant Bubba. 7 foot, 315, 33 years pro. All Japan legend, now competes on a limited basis. Won the NWA title three times. Among the first wrestlers of his stature to excel, famed Bigfoot kick and judo chops. Giant Baba, a legend in Japan, goddammit.
Yeah, he's the legend. Japanese-wise. And it was one of the... It's kind of... I know Andre went over there, so don't get me wrong in saying that, but it's kind of like... In Japan, it's like nobody looks like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like... It was like that was part of the appeal of it. It's like, this guy doesn't look like it. Like, come on, look at this guy, Jesus. And then he was smart enough to, like, you know that promoting's where it's at. And
yeah, and I mean, he was it's for those of you that don't know, that might be younger or haven't looked into it, him and Antonio Inoki were with Ricky Dozan in the Japanese Wrestling Association, and then they kind of, between the two of them, they split, and they became, you know, New Japan and All Japan. And here we are, you know, 50-something years later, and you have those promotions because of Giant Baba and Antonio Inoki, and they are like the icons of their sport over there.
And I heard he almost ran it like the mob, he had his underlings, and just made sure that he wasn't always accessible. Like they said, I'm not saying I know everything about it, but to me, it sounded like he wasn't like as accessible to the boys and stuff as like what like Inoki would have been or whatever. But like, mm-hmm. he was almost kind of like a mysterious type figure, unless you were up in that main event type level,
right?
And like I said, I'm not the biggest Japanese wrestling expert, but you can't deny what Giant Baba meant to the Japanese wrestling industry. And I don't know if he's in, you know, WWE's Hall of Fame or not, but if he isn't, he should be.
Yeah, and he may be one of those people. They did like the legacy when they were doing the Legacy Hall of Fame thing, where they just induct like 10 old guys for, you know, in a video package or whatever. I'd have to look and see. Yeah. Speaking of him, and
what I was trying to get at with like the mob thing was, I wasn't saying like he was in the mob, but I heard it was kind of like he was kind of like how Gorilla was here,
connected.
Where he wasn't in it, but he could make a phone call if he needed to, type of thing.
Yeah, I'm sure he could. So, bringing him up, and you said something about Andre. This has nothing to do with the conversation about the PWI 500, but it's something that I wanted to bring up because it had me. It put me back on my heels a little bit the other day. You know, we say, you know, that expression, they don't make new music for old people. And it's kind of the same with wrestling. Like I've always said to everybody, you know, to my son, Ric Flair was just an old guy that was on TV. The real stars to my son in his eyes were John Cena, Randy. You know what I mean? It's generational. Just like to us, the big star was Hulk Hogan, not Bruno Sammartino. But something that really blew my mind the other day, I work retail management, folks. There is a kid that works for me, and he is 20 years old, okay? And he's a big AEW fan, and that's fine. And we talk about wrestling. I mean, yeah, obviously he knows WWE too, but he likes the AEW. And I said something about Andre the Giant the other day. And do you know what that kid said to me?
He said,
I've seen him. I've never seen him wrestle, though. And it made me think that we have now come to Andre the Giant died in 93. So it's 31 years ago. We have an entire literal generation of people that never watched Andre the Giant wrestle live. You know what I mean? Like, it's insane. Time is fucking crazy.
It's also crazy because it's like, you have all this access to all this shit now.
Mm-hmm. But that kid, like, that hey, kid's
I
want to
watch Andre.
But that kid's not, he's not like you and me. He's not one of these people that's going to go back and watch shit from before he was born or whatever. So what he knows is what he's watched as a fan since he was like five. So what, 15 years? So he's only been watching wrestling since 2010 or whatever.
Oh my God.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Isn't it fucking crazy?
This kid's sitting at home being like, Seth Rollins is, well, no, he doesn't like WWE.
Well, no, he said he watches WWE. I'm just saying he likes AEW. Like, that's his jam sandwich. But
yeah, okay. Well, I'm just trying to think of somebody.
Like, he's like the first wrestling he saw was when that old man Shawn Michaels had his retirement match against that old man The Undertaker. You know. Yeah. Anyway, it's fucking nuts to think about it in that perspective.
Like, he's sitting around being like, oh, the Young Bucks are the greatest team ever. It's like, fuck you. I shouldn't say fuck you. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's like, no, you got to go and watch. And I don't want to sound like the old guy yelling at the clouds, but it is.
But maybe you are now. Maybe I am too. Like, when I talk to this kid, I get that perspective. Like, oh, God, fuck. I am the old guy yelling at the clouds now.
Like, in his mind, Chris Jericho's the greatest from the past.
Yes. But,
okay. Like, that's the GOAT right there, man. It's like, he's great, or he used to be. He went from being great to good, mm-hmm. to now just being whatever.
Or to that kid, the voice of professional wrestling is Michael Cole. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But anyway.
I'm not knocking Michael Cole.
No.
You think he
Michael Cole has been literally the voice of the WWE longer than anybody in history, so
yeah.
He's been the voice of that company longer than Vince was in the booth.
Yeah, and he came in 97.
Yep.
So it'd be how many years now?
27.
And if he does what he said he's gonna do, he's got three more years left. He said, like, because they asked him, like, you've been around forever, and he said he wanted to cap it off with 30 years. He wanted to be in the WWE for 30 years, be consistent and be good for 30 years, and then just be like, see ya.
But yeah, he's been in my ring, and
I can go away.
He's been the commentary voice of that company longer than Gorilla was, longer than Vince was, longer than JR was. Technically, he's the longest running voice of the WWE in history.
I read a little interview with him or whatever. He said he's going to do 30 years, hopefully go in the Hall of Fame. And they asked him who would be his replacement, and he thinks it's Corey Graves.
I saw that he said he thinks Corey Graves is ready to do it. Because he said he doubted him at first. But he said he's proven himself and he thinks he's ready to be the voice. So. All right. All right. So moving on to number 231, JT Smith. 6'2", 238, 4 years pro. Philadelphia native, popular with ECW fans. Makes most of quickness with drop kicks off the top rope maneuvers. Should only get better in years to come. Former tri-state champion, JT Smith.
Everything I read about him or heard about him, he was a loyal guy, did whatever he asked him to do. I thought he was entertaining when he was on ECW.
Well, you can definitely say he's one guy that you can definitely put as an ECW mainstay. Like I think he was there the entire run of the company.
Yeah, on and off. And I liked him. And like I said, he was entertaining and he had a good little goofy gimmick. And
he knew he was goofy and embraced it.
Yeah. Like, and he probably knew also, I'm not going to. He kind of like we were talking about with some of those job guys. It's like, I don't see myself getting any further than this, so I'm going to embrace where I'm at and do my thing. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, I don't even know if he ever even worked as like enhancement in either one of like WWE or WCW.
Not that I know of. I
don't remember seeing him.
Not that I know of. 230, Tim Horner. 5'10", 235, 10 years pro, out of Smoky Mountain, into the independents, incredibly quick, with extensive Japanese experience, might have problems against bigger opponents, won two Southern independent tag titles in successive nights. I'm not a Tim Horner fan.
I'm not either, and I'm not even saying it because, the one guy hates him. I'm saying I think he's boring. I don't see anything about him in the ring. You know what I mean?
Like, mm-hmm.
When you make me not want to watch a Brad Armstrong match, you're not very good. I'll say that much, because you know how much I love Brad Armstrong.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I thought he was boring, and one of the worst things ever was him trying to sing Shameless.
Oh, God.
I'm Shameless. It's like, ugh.
Yeah, I mean, Cornette only let him be where he was out of necessity.
Yeah. And then what did he say when Rick Rubin saw that? Rick Rubin was like, Rick Rubin was helping bankroll that company,
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm a musical producer, right? Like, I do music for a living. And I'm telling people that I'm banking the show. And you put that on. And you played the whole thing. Like, that was the other thing. He was like,
yeah.
Why are you just playing 20 seconds of it? You let him do the entire song. It's kind of like that story where Ole shows up and he's like, stop it. Stop what? All of it.
All of it.
Like, this should not have been on TV at all. And he was just lame. I thought he was anyway.
I agree. I've never seen anything from Tim Horner that I would ever like purposefully rewatch again.
Yeah. His mind.
Number 229 is one of my favorite luchadors of all time, La Parca. 6'1", 235, 7 years pro. Mexican rule breaker, wrestles in skeleton costume, tag team partner of Psychosis. Will take incredible punishment in the ring, but compensates with flying skill, one of AAA's biggest draws. I love fucking La Parca. I just do.
Yeah, he's entertaining, and it's a gimmick like I kind of said about Tiger Mask or Jushin Liger, where it's like, since especially the kind of Liger, this is like the full body suit and everything like that. Like, his character never gets old, you know? Mm-hmm. And he got over like when he got to WCW, and he got to be out of like the just like being labeled just a cruiserweight, because he figured out American wrestling. Like, you got to be goofy and. Like, he always danced down there and everything, but like,
mm-hmm.
he had an American style of wrestling that worked with, stumbled over my words. He took lucha, but still added like the American flair to it. Of
mm-hmm.
like, oh, I'm gonna use this chair and I'm gonna dance.
He didn't have the success. I guess in North, and he was successful, but he didn't have the success of Rey Mysterio, but he got that it's different in the United States, like Rey Mysterio did.
And he didn't have the Rey Mysterio thing, and it was mainly because he didn't speak English,
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's why Ray and Eddie and Ubi and all those guys, that's why they got that next level, because they could cut promos and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, La Parca was awesome.
Number 228, Octagon, 5'5", 160, 6 years pro, AAA tag champion, is Mexico's answer to Hulk Hogan and Sting. Biggest merchandise seller in Mexico. Many young children have Octagon masks. Combines high-flying moves with martial arts. Octagon, yeah, I mean, in his country, he was a cultural phenomenon for a while. And he never transitioned to the United States. I mean, I know that they did the thing in the WWF. He did some of that shit in 97 when they had the AAA guys come in to try to counter WCW's cruiserweights, but he never transitioned here, but in Mexico, he was a big fucking star.
Wasn't he on the Worlds Collide pay-per-view too, I think?
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's see.
That's a little nest egg. I don't even think that's on the network. I don't know why.
It's not. I think it's because it's just like the New Japan shows. I think because it was a co-promotion thing, they don't have the full rights to it.
No.
Because they don't have the we remember when Flair and Fujinami did the New Japan / WCW pay-per-view. The network doesn't have that either. I think that's why, because it's probably because half of it is owned by New Japan and half of it is owned by the WCW library. And they don't want to pay New Japan.
That's what I was saying. If not, they'd have to figure out how to like, you know, how do we get these guys their residuals or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
227 is the guy we had a little chuckle at last week because he was in someone else's description and we called him Mr. Ranchula. T. Ranchula, 7'3", 15, 3 years pro, ACW heavyweight champ, regularly accompanied to the ring by his manager, the Black Widow, nicknamed the Giant. Awesome power slam, has done in many opponents. T. Ranchula. But it was funny, last week we were reading whoever and they were like, defeated Ranchula. I don't know if I've ever seen T. Ranchula wrestle, but I've seen him a lot in the magazines back in the day.
Yeah, he was in the magazines all the time because he was a Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania guy. But yeah, I mean, he stayed in his little area. He looked like shit, but he kept getting a paycheck every weekend, so good for him, you know.
Number 226.
And his big mama old lady. I'm sure like they probably... I'm sure she was a big mama. Probably had a mullet.
And number 226.
No way, T. Ranchula is not a biker.
Mm-hmm.
No way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's got his big mama with him, and they just roll down the road.
And then on the weekend, he works at the factory. Or during the week, he works at the factory. And the weekend, he's wrestling in Poughkeepsie. Yeah. Number 226 is Tex Slasinger, 6'7", 3'10", 4 years pro. Always gives his all, but virtually never beats WCW contenders. Brawler best known as tagmate of Shanghai Pierce, but is wrestling more solo matches these days. Excellent Texas Death Drop. And we talked about these guys last week. Of course, Tex Slasinger is Phineas, Dennis Knight. Yeah.
Shanghai Pierce. Shanghai Pierce, Tex Slasinger. Looking back on it, you know, there's always that thing of, oh, did you like these guys better in the WWF or WCW? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I know they lost a lot in WCW. I almost think they were more entertaining in WCW as a team.
I'd agree. I'd actually agree.
The Godwin thing got kind of stale and whatever. It was kind of one-dimensional. But Shanghai Pierce and Tex Slasinger, I think, were cooler in WCW.
And like we discussed last week, they were also, for that center stage crowd, they were like...
That little peach tree crowd, that was the fucking, like...
It's like the Quebecers at the Manhattan Center, like I said last week. It's like the Quebecers at the Manhattan Center.
These guys are here every week. They're putting in the work. Yeah, and I, like I said, I just think they were that tag in WCW. It was more of a dimensional, like it wasn't just a one dimensional. These guys are pig farmers, and I'm not saying they sucked in WWE. I mean, they were still entertaining there and everything, but I just think it was cooler when they had like a cool look and like the one wore a mask and one didn't. And I thought it was cool. I thought it was cool.
I did too. And I was actually going to mention that about the fact that the thing that was super unique about their gimmick was it was one masked guy and one unmasked guy.
I think they just, they got to work there. They actually got to like wrestle. Like in WWE, they had to wrestle like hillbillies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because neither one of them are bad workers at all.
No, no.
And I just think they had better matches. And it was just at this point in their career, they were more entertaining.
Yeah, we're in agreement on that. 225. What a future this guy's going to have. But this is 94. This is 30 years ago. 30 years ago. 225, Jean-Paul Levesque, 6'5", 279, 3 years pro, improving WCW rule breaker, formerly wrestled under the name Terra Rising, Boston native, trained by Killer Kowalski, painful inverted Indian deathlock finisher, grew up idolizing Ric Flair. And what can you say? This guy,
went on to do, this guy went on to do nothing. Who did he ever beat?
And of course, for those of you that don't know, and if you don't know, if you know, if you're listening to this, you know, of course, this is the future Triple H, who is now one of the three guys. It's crazy. In 2024, the WWE is being run by The Rock and DX. Isn't that fucking nuts? Vince McMahon's no longer there, and DX and The Rock are running the show.
And they're like, we're going to get rid of all of his friends except Brother Love.
Yeah.
Brother Love can stick around. You're cool.
And I promise you, Pritchard, I promise you Pritchard's there because of Hunter.
And Sean, too. I mean, they probably like him and they're used to him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's how do I say it? He's a wrestling guy. You know, yeah. People could say what they want to say about him, but he's a wrestling guy. And like Kevin Dunn's leaving because Kevin Dunn never liked wrestling.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's probably like, we're going to go ahead and get rid of you. But Bruce over here, he's a wrestling guy. Like he loves it and understands it and doesn't want it to be anything other than wrestling.
And it helps Pritchard that he's a yes man, because as a yes man, he doesn't make waves. He doesn't bring attention to himself.
And there's nothing wrong with being that. People make it out like it's a bad thing. But I tell people all the time, like, and it, obviously my job isn't as nearly as high stress or whatever as what those guys go through. But, like, there's always people that want to buck the system and complain or why are we doing it this way? Why are we doing it that way? It's like, well, because they're the guy making the decisions is paying me.
Right.
You know? And it's also the fact of I'll do it that way. And then if whoever is above that guy comes in and goes, this was dumb. Why did you do this? I'm going to be like, that guy over there told me to do it that way. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to go talk to that guy. You know what I mean? It's the same way when you're in a company with investors and everything. Eventually, if it's a bad decision, your investors or your stockholders are going to be like, why are you doing it this way? It's like, well, I don't have to answer to that. The guy that's in charge does. So go talk to him. I'm just doing my job. So I think sometimes he gets a, I don't know why we got talking about Bruce Pritchard, but I think he gets a bad rap in that aspect. I believe support the people that are paying you and toe the company line in public.
Yep.
Say what you want to say in private, but toe the company line in public. But, oh, it's because we were talking about Hunter.
Triple H.
He's a guy that they should like. It's kind of like an Austin or something like that, where they're like, oh, or Kevin Nash. It's like, we see nothing in you. You'll never accomplish anything. Nobody will pay money to see you. You can go ahead and leave. And it's like, well, look at that. All those people that said you'll amount to nothing no longer have jobs in the wrestling business.
Right, yeah. 224.
And you're now the most important, powerful man in the entire business. It also shows that sometimes it Triple H got to where he was at because he got trained by the guys that were like, we're in the wrestling business, not the friendship business.
Yeah.
Like he learned from Scott, Kevin, and
I would say overall in his career, first of all, he's always been consistent. Second, he's always been a great worker. Especially when it comes to like big match type situations, as Randy Savage would say. And great mind. The only time that I would ever say in his career that, and it wasn't even that he was having bad matches, but the only time that I would say in his whole career that Triple H was a little overbearing to me was like during the very post first like 4 years after the WCW collapsed. And he was doing the Evolution thing. And I'm not saying it was bad, but I'm saying that's the time where Triple H was a little full of himself and monopolized way too much of the program. It's like from the end of WCW till John Cena and Batista arrived at their big time, Triple H was kind of overbearing. But other than that,
yeah.
I can't. What's that?
So I'll give you that.
You know, a period of time where every Raw started with a fucking 20-minute Triple H promo.
Yeah, and it was also kind of a time though where you were talking about where they didn't get John and Dave yet, but a lot of the other guys that were up in that era were gone. You know what I mean? So it was kind of like he's the guy right now. And we still got to try to establish these other guys. So you kind of got to lean on them a little more.
Yeah. Well, but there's also in like 2002, 2003, early 2004, a lot of just him like swinging his dick, beating everybody that comes in from ECW or WCW too. Like, oh, Booker T's here. I got to beat him. Goldberg's here. I got to beat him. But anyway,
like I said, he's got the job. And the last thing I'll say about him, and I have a lot of respect for anybody that does this, is that motherfucker, if you were loyal to him, he is loyal to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like every guy that was loyal to him has some kind of job in that fucking company.
Mm-hmm.
Like he didn't forget, like a lot of times people forget the people that as they're going up that are going down, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He remembered all of those people. And he takes care of his people. And I respect that. And they respect him for that. Like, did you see what Kevin Nash said? About did you see that?
Oh, yeah, about not going to Sting's last match.
Yeah, he's like, I'm a Hunter guy. I can't. He's like, I love Steve, but I can't go be on that show. Hunter's done too much for me. He's my boy. That would be disrespectful. You know what I mean? And I like that about that group of guys.
Yeah.
And how Hunter treats his people, even the people that aren't in the clique, because like William Regal, he could have forgot about Regal. He worked with him what, like a year?
Yeah,
you know, he could have forgot about that guy and just chopped it off to like, I worked with him for a little bit and he has problems. He looked at that and was like, this guy's the dude. He's fucking awesome. Let's get him over here. Let's get him healthy. So yeah, that's the main thing I respect about him is I think Hunter's a decent person. I think he's a good, people can say what they want to say, but I think down to the end of it, he's a good guy.
Mm-hmm. 224, Kane. 6'1", 244, 5 years pro, part of WCW's Harlem Heat tag team, formerly Stevie Ray, was global heavyweight champion for much of 93, enthusiastic and popular with fans, adept at both singles and tag wrestling. We don't have to go on too much on this because we talked about Harlem Heat last week, but yeah, at this time, there's still Kane and Cole in WCW and haven't switched over to Booker T and Stevie Ray yet.
Yeah, that was stupid names for those guys. But I mean, I just, I mean, we don't have to talk, like you said, we don't have to talk too much about him because, I mean, awesome tag team. Kind of had a couple hiccups at the start of their WCW run, but obviously fleshed it out and became the shit. Probably in that era, probably, I'd say, best during, tag team. I mean, we could say what we're saying, best tag team they had.
During this, during this time, I know it was in 93 and this is 94. But also during this time, they got to be a part of the people that got to be on stage when Shockmaster fell down, and everybody was like, oh, God. And they were all just like, oh. And even Sid's the best because Sid's like, oh, God.
Oh, God, damn it. Ah. Did you get to watch Haku watch that?
Yeah, I sent it to you.
Well, I mean, did you? Mm-hmm. I watched it on the TV. Like,
oh no, I watched a clip of it on YouTube, and I had sent it to you, but our chat, our podcast chat, but
it might have been that because I don't remember you sending it to me.
Swimming to find the fucking gimmick. Yeah, I watched that video like five times of Haku laughing at that because I was just enjoying it so much. to watch the baddest motherfucker in the planet just lose it.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing about wrestling too, is like, because we've seen everything. Some of those guys just never seen it. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, Haku wasn't watching WCW back then.
Yeah. Yeah, he watched Fred blow through a wall and fall on his ass. I was working. You know what I mean? But yeah. Harlem Heat was the shit, and they're one of the best things WCW ever did.
Number 223 is Pero Aguayo, 5'10", 215, 25 years pro. One of Mexico's greats, extremely popular, renowned for his enthusiasm, has held countless light heavyweight titles, also a champion in Japan, Puerto Rico, and California. I cannot say that I've watched much Pero Aguayo at all, so I really don't have a comment.
I didn't see any of his old stuff, but I saw him when he was old.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw him on certain things that he had become like a nostalgia act.
Yeah.
Like he didn't do a whole lot and he was always in just tag matches with his boy and somebody else or whatever. And he wasn't doing dives or any of that shit. But yeah, I mean, he's just a guy I don't know enough about, he's a guy that I haven't seen enough, but I know that he's a legend. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right. 222 is Friendly Frank. Friendly Frank Finnegan, 6'5", 588 pounds.
Good God!
1 year pro, probably died at that size. He'd be glad he considers himself friendly. The reigning WWA heavyweight champion has feuded with another behemoth, former WWF star, King Kong Bundy. At 5'88", I'm sure by 95, he was dead or in a diabetic coma. Jesus.
Yeah. Bundy showed up and was like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this fat fucker?
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. When King Kong Bundy calls you fat.
Yeah. What am I supposed to do with this big fat piece of shit?
At least he's friendly. 221. Colonel
DeBeers. He smells like corn nuts and damp socks. Like, what am I doing working with this guy?
Colonel DeBeers is 221, 6'1", 248, 16 years pro, obnoxious South African who has despicable racist political beliefs, has wrestled in the Pacific Northwest in recent years. Violent feud with Jimmy Snuka has become legendary.
I hate that type of gimmick.
Yeah.
Just hate it. It's the laziest fucking thing in the world.
I agree.
It is a lazy fucking gimmick. And I just don't like it. And he could be an all right guy or whatever, but it's like, that's lazy fucking cheap.
And I'm sure if you got to the root of it, It was probably even one of those things like Iron Sheik, where he acted like he hated America because he actually loved America and wanted to make fun of the Iranian people, you know, or they're not the Iranian people, not the people. You never want to attack the people of a country.
Yeah, I know. But
the government. And I'm sure De Beers did that gimmick to throw shade at the South African apartheid people. But I agree with you. It's super cheap heat.
Yeah, I don't think. Sometimes even when they bring politics into it, I'm like, bah, or whatever, you know, but I'll let that slide. But I don't like when you start bringing in like race and shit into wrestling. I don't like it. It's not good heat for me. It's go away type heat. Yeah. Like, I love Roddy Piper, but when he do it, I just be like, eh, I don't know, man.
Lawler,
he didn't do it all the time.
Lawler,
yeah, he didn't do it all the time. But I was just like, yeah. Like Piper was doing that, like he got his gnarly bristles on. It's like, why you got to go there, man?
Mm-hmm.
It's like that's kind of lazy. But anyway,
220 is Action Jackson, 6'2", 297, 10 years pro, native of Texarkana, Texas, has done well in Global Wrestling Federation, has intensely feuded with Iceman Parsons, resulting in some unusual matches. A big fan favorite among Texas fans.
I don't remember a lot about him.
Yeah, he's just your, I hate to say this because we were just talking about race, but he is. He's just, he was the, and it's not his fault, but he was the guy that they promoted as your babyface black guy, you know, just anyway, like Bill Watts.
Yeah.
219 is Irish Mickey Doyle. 5'11", 221, 24 years pro, veteran from Michigan with a superb pile driver, has won many regional titles facing opponents such as Killer Brooks and Greg Valentine. 1971 Rookie of the Year is still going strong. Mickey Doyle is one of those guys that I don't know if I've ever watched much of him wrestle, but I always hear people talk about him and that he was good. So that's all I can say.
And is that one of the only, like, nationalities or whatever because there's like a lot of guys that'll be like Irish something something, you know what I mean? But you don't ever hear anybody being like I'm Mexican Luis
right <Garza." laughs> I'm German Hans Schmidt.
Yeah they might have like the German excursion or something, like, you know, some like,
yeah,
like put their like their nationality on it, like the Polish hammer or something like that, you know, but like, yeah, it's just Irish whatever, whatever.
And I'm sure he had shamrocks on his tights.
It's like I'm Canadian Bret Hart. Yeah, it's just I don't know. But anyway.
Number 218 is one of those names that I know the name from the magazines, but I don't know if I've ever even seen him. Scotty McKeever. 6'1", 220, 2 years pro. Currently teams with Scotty Hotbody as the Heartbreakers and reign as ICW tag champs. Has made several appearances on WCW television. Maybe I have seen him. Currently feuding with the Pretty Young Things. If I've seen what the guy looks like, I don't remember.
I don't know.
But I know the name. I recognize the name.
It could also be somebody that we have seen him, but maybe he wasn't Scotty McKeever on WCW. Maybe he was something else. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because maybe they were like, oh, we don't want you to be with Scotty Flamingo and your name Scotty as well or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Number 217 is in his rookie year. And I'm sure Aaron's going to know. For you listeners out there, while I'm doing the description, try to guess who this is. 217, 6'4", 306 pounds, rookie year, Moadib. Global contender from desert of northeastern Africa, discovered by General Skandor Akbar, tough, big, strong, continuing to improve his skills, Rule Breaker has good future ahead of him.
And he never, he continued until about, I don't know, a couple months after this, and then just stopped trying to fix his skills.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know, Moadib is Ahmed Johnson.
Sorry, I didn't mean to make that loud noise there. Like, I thought my laptop was charged more than it was. And then it's like, boom, you're about to die. It's like, well, I got to poke you in. But anyway, yeah. I know that you liked him, but I just never liked him.
I liked Ahmed Johnson. I liked Ahmed Johnson 1995 until like the end of 96. Because I thought his promos were not great. Actually, they were fucking gibberish. But amongst the WWF roster at that time, he did have good charisma. He was over. But then as he got fat and full of himself, like he's one of those guys that literally when he came in, he was young, he was hungry. You can just watch him. You can just watch him become a self-important piece of shit. You know what I mean? It's like when he first came in, he was young, he was hungry. You could tell he was taking advice and not being a fucking asshole. And by the time he left in early 98, total asshole, totally full of himself. He'd become fat and bloated, you know, and you could just tell. You can watch him on TV and not even know the backstage stories and know the backstage stories.
Yeah. Like, I think it was, I don't know who it was. Like, when he left, everybody was like, nobody was like mad.
Yeah.
Like, upset or, like, oh, man. Ahmed's leaving. Oh, shucks. Kind of like when like Ludwig Borga left. Like,
well, great. And you also look back at it now and you realize, like, because back then you were like, Jesus Christ, why is this guy still feuding with Farouk? And you realize now
he was that hurt.
But he also feuded with Farouk for 2 years because they knew that if they put him in the ring with Ron Simmons, he wasn't going to be able to fucking go into business for himself or something, be an asshole because Ron Simmons would just put him in his place. You know what I mean?
Like, he was like, why I gotta be fighting Ron all the time? Like, try being nice,
man. Yeah. Ron will fucking pistol whip you with his foot. That's why.
Like, he's like, Ron keeps injuring me because you're being an asshole and nobody wants you around.
Pissing him off, right?
Jackass.
Jackass.
But yeah, he sucked. I didn't like him at all. Not even when he first came in. Like, I can even remember being a kid and being like, I don't like this guy. he's like the ultimate warrior to me. It's like, I don't see anything about you that's like, whatever. You look good. That's it.
And Jim Ross will call you the Big Johnson.
Yeah. The big, look at him. I think, who was it? I don't remember what it was, but he even said, like,
the Big Johnson explodes.
Yeah. And I can't remember who it was. It might have been Farouk or whatever, but Jim Ross is like, he's in there handling the Big Johnson. It's like, oh my God, Jim. Like, I don't know if he knew what he was saying.
He absolutely knew what he was saying.
Or if he did. I watched the talking about Jim real quick. Yeah, sometimes you can find those like when they're off the air.
Oh yeah,
stuff like their satellite feeds or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the hard cam is just like the camera's just focused on the entrance way, you know.
I think this is another video I sent you.
Is it the Creed thing? I saw that video on my own.
Oh, okay. Well, I also sent that in our group chat. So yes, I know what you're talking about.
Sometimes I have to turn our group chats off. I'm not gonna lie, because I'll be at work, and it's like somebody gets restless at like noon, and it's like ta-ding, 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 ta-ding. It's like, but oh yes, my
I also sent that in that, like, when he's like, oh, look, we're going to hear Creed again.
Yeah. My sacrifice. I can't believe it. So you don't think about that. Like, we saw the video and we're like, that was really cool. These guys have to watch and listen to that song
over and over and over
and over. It's like Paul Rudd on 40-Year-Old Virgin. Michael McDonald.
Michael McDonald.
Can we find something else?
Number
two. Buy the TV, I will throw the DVD in for free.
Number 216 is Carlos Colon, this youngster. 5'10, 246, 29 years pro. Retired last August, but pull of the ring proved too great. Most popular wrestler in Puerto Rican history. Has held the WWC Universal title many times, feuded with Abdullah the Butcher.
I think he was like the same age as Gorilla Monsoon. Gorilla Monsoon was like, there goes this fiery youngster.
Yeah, this fiery. Oh, Gorilla totally did that as a rib.
Oh, I know. This fiery youngster finally making his way to the WWF. I mean, he worked a style that worked for him, you know?
Yeah. Like,
and he owned an island, basically. I mean, he's. So you can't deny that.
Nope. And his culture, again, like we talk about some of these other guys, in Puerto Rican culture, in pro wrestling, he's a cultural icon.
Yeah. And so more power to him on that. He's still alive, too, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. He produced talented children. So, I mean, yeah, I got nothing against Carlos Colon.
Number 215, I think a guy we chuckled about a few weeks ago, his name. He was talked about in the bio of somebody else, but it's Firefighter Adrian, 5'9", 230, current West Coast Championship Wrestling mid-heavyweight title holder, has a strong upper body and above-average speed, captured the title in a lumberjack match, defeating Randy Tyler, Philadelphia native. I don't know who this is, so I don't know what to say about him other than his name.
Sounds like a stripper. Sounds like now coming to the stage, ladies. Firefighter Adrian. Fire.
Number 214 is Lismark.
Watch out, ladies. Watch out, ladies. My hose is about to explode.
Jesus Christ. 214, Lismark, 5'6", 190, 19 years pro, stocky native of Acapulco, current Mexican light heavyweight champion. In early 40s, but you'd never know it from his ring speed, he and Lismark Jr. are feuding with the Guerrero family.
I was going to say, I like Lismark Jr. I know he wasn't like, you know, one of the top lucha guys that came over here or whatever, but I thought he was cool. And I liked because he matched his dad's outfit. I like their outfit and like the mask and everything.
I agree.
I just like Lismark.
213, another one of those guys from our childhood that we saw job out a lot on TV, currently in the ring, Italian Stallion, 6'3", 260, 11 years pro, gave up PWF heavyweight title to share tag title with George South, currently feuding with Austin Steele, has wrestled at WWF TV tapings, still holds the world record for spaghetti eating. Gary Sabo, sure. Italian Stallion, good job.
Yeah, but everything I heard, he was a piece of shit dude. Like, he wasn't a very good guy.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny that the Hardy Boys were, like, his downfall. Like, the Hardy Boys were finally like, what are we giving you money for? Like, they were the first guys to, like, put it together and be like, because you drive us in the van? And he's like, no, I got you guys booked. It's like, well, you got us booked the first couple times. Now they know we're good. So now we'll just go right to them. And we don't need you to drive us. We're good. So they just went to, I think they just went to Bruce Prichard or whatever. I was like, hey, instead of calling him, why don't you just call us directly? And then everybody else started doing it. And then they were like, we don't need you anymore, Italian Stallion.
Arrivederci. let's see here. 212, Terry Gordy, 6'4", 289, 14 years pro. Back in Global with the Freebirds, feuding with John Hawk and Black Bart. Held the WCW World Tag Title with Steve Williams in 92-93. Brawler frequently competes in Japan. I got to say this because I was thinking about this the other day, actually. It's kind of funny. Okay, so you think about the Freebirds in World Class with the Von Erichs, right?
Yeah.
So we're talking like 83, 84. Let's put it that way. Let's say 83. And you look at Terry Gordy. And you look at Terry Gordy and his big fucking body and his big fucking head and his big fucking everything. And then you're like, this dude is 19 years old. Like, it's insane. It is insane what a big fucking person this guy was. 19 years old, he looked like that?
Yeah, he looked like one of them. I don't even know what to say he looked like. I'm trying to, like, describe him. That's something. But it's like one of them, just some big, massive, like, fucking dogs. Like, I don't know where I'm
like
going.
Like a mastiff?
Yeah, this is big, huge. Like, nothing should be this big. You know what I mean? Like, he's a giant man and could fucking move. And I think the problem with that was he, like you said, he was 19 years old and he was in the wrong environment to have somebody that's 19 years old.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The epitome of too much too fast.
Yeah, if he would have been 19 years old and working in like WWF or even the NWA, maybe probably would have got away with it, cuz you could have been like, "Oh, let's stick him with this guy because this guy's clean." You know what I mean? But it's like, who are we going to put him with in WCC? Who are we going to put him in World Class with that's clean?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. None of them, because none of them are. Like, everybody in this locker room is a junkie of some sort. And I shouldn't say that. But you know what I mean.
Yeah,
like,
an addict of some sort.
Yeah, and it's like, when you're 19 years old, that's primo partying time, you know? Yeah. It's like,
but like I said, and I think it was a couple of years ago that, like, maybe one of those, you know how sometimes you're watching wrestling and you look somebody up on Wikipedia or something just because you forget something or whatever. And I looked at his birthday and I'm watching something from like 84. And I'm like, this fucking dude isn't even 20 years old yet. And look at him. Jesus fucking Christ.
I mean, also think of like, there's a couple guys that are like that. Boss Man, Big Boss Man.
Yeah.
He was 41 years old when he died. If I'm
Tenta.
Right. Yeah. Rude. Rick Rude was 40 years old when he died.
Mm-hmm. It's insane.
So when he's like when he's in like WCW and doing that, in my opinion, the best run of his career, and he looks like like he's only like 30 something years old there. You know what I mean? It's like, that's not. Like, he looks like an intimidating older man. You know, you get what I'm saying? Like, like, you just don't see it. And I know what you're saying there. Like, when Boss Man was Big Bubba and was working with Cornette and stuff, he's in his like fucking 20s. It's like, this is insane. People aren't supposed to look like this. That's why I always say people can say what they want to say about wrestlers, but they're a fucking different breed, man. There's nobody else in the world like a professional wrestler.
All right, we've about reached our 90 minutes, so we'll do one more name here tonight. We're going to round it out at number 211, Ron Garvin. 6'2", 231, 29 years pro. Beat Ric Flair for the NWA World title in 1987. Hands of Stone, still a fixture on the independent scene. Excellent punching power. Has lost a step or two. And Ron Garvin is actually a guy over the years that I've softened.
I would say you and I have differing opinions on Ron Garvin.
We do, but if you've noticed, I've softened on him. Because sometimes you go back to those core memories of something, you know, and you don't really give it a fair chance. And I go back to my core memories as a younger guy of Ron Garvin in the late 80s in Crockett with a stupid fucking trucker hat and that stupid shit. And then in the WWF, and he's old, and I didn't know it back then, but he's old and he's plodding and he's not entertaining at all. But I can go back now and watch Ron Garvin in ICW. I can watch Ron Garvin in Georgia. I can watch Ron Garvin in Montreal. And I can see where the reverence for him is. Like, I'm willing to be a guy that's willing to change my opinion. And I've softened on Garvin over the years because I've got out of that thinking about him in that fucking 5-year period. You know what I mean? Yeah. I hate truck. I hate fucking trucker hat Ron Garvin. I'm never going to deny that. I don't like it. I don't find it entertaining. I think he's fucking boring in Crockett. But I can see I can see why Ronnie Garvin is regarded as a great wrestler.
You know when they turned him heel and it didn't work?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Did I ever tell you the idea that I thought of, and it's revisionist history, right. Did I ever tell you the idea that I thought of that I was like, man, this is how they should have turned him heel? Have I ever told you what it was?
I don't think so.
He was like the national champion, okay? Mm-hmm. And then him and Barry win the tag team titles together. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah.
And they say you can't, in NWA rules, you can't hold two belts at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically has to choose, am I going to keep my national championship that I've cherished and fought so hard for? Or am I going to give that up and stick with my buddy Barry, and we're going to be the tag team champions? And he chooses to stand next to his buddy Barry and hold the tag team championship. So he gives up the national title that he worked so hard for, you know?
Yeah.
They should have done that like they did. But like the next week, Arn and Tully beat Barry and Ronnie Garvin for the tag team titles, and Barry got pinned.
He's like, God.
And then Ronnie Garvin is just like, you son of a bitch. And just decks him. He's like, I gave up everything I fought for you. Like, I think that would have been like the best way to turn him heel.
Instead, they did the Dusty thing.
I think it would have been much cooler. Like, I was like, why did anybody see that idea? It's like a great fucking idea. Like, I gave up everything for you.
And you lost a belt yesterday.
Like, it would have been great, I think. But I've always liked him, and I like a little sawed-off, tough, little scrappy wrestler anyway. It's just something I've always liked, you know that.
Yeah, and like I said, I've softened on Ronnie Garvin over the years. I'm not one of those people that holds their opinion without, you know what I'm saying? Like, I can go back and watch things that weren't part of the stuff that I don't like and see the stuff that, okay, I see it. Like his feud with Randy Savage in ICW, or go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, like, when you talk about when he got to Vince, I never even really minded. I was kind of like to the Greg Valentine Ronnie Garvin feud. I thought it was funny and kind of exciting. Mm-hmm. Like they were like, we got one over on this guy. He's gone now. Now he's been the ref and he's not fucking with him and everything. I liked the feud.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he was just a badass little guy, man. Shouldn't say little guy, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, he was a guy that just anybody in that locker room was like, don't fuck with that guy. We'll fuck you up.
Well, that is going to be our last person that we discuss this week. We'll pick it up next week at number 210 in the PWI 500 from 1994. I do want to let everybody know you can check us out if you aren't already a member of our Facebook group. It's the WNR Podcast Network on Facebook. You can also check us out on YouTube, the WNR Podcast Network. And of course, you can also listen to me, Aaron, and Chad Austin discuss week to week the history of ECW on Reliving the Extreme. And you can find that anywhere you find your favorite podcasts. And I know Aaron would say the same as me. If you like the shows, if you like what we're doing, The best way to do that, the best way to support us is to tell people about our shows, tell people about our podcasts, let them know it's entertaining, tell them to check it out, the We Can't Wrestle podcast and Reliving the Extreme. And I know I probably monopolized everything there, Aaron, but do you have any other parting words for our listeners this week?
That's fine that you did that. I'm never good at ending things. just ask any of the people I've been in relationships with. Just like Nate said, thanks for listening. Rate, review, tell your friends, tell your wives, and tell your mistresses, and just get the word out there, because I think we do a very good job all around. Every guy that contributes does their work, and like I said, I'm rambling, but I just think it's a show you sit and sleep on. It's the best little unknown wrestling podcast out there, I think.
And I agree. And thank you everybody for joining us. And like I said, we'll pick up next week at number 210 in the 1994 PWI 500. Little hint, he goes on to become one of the great heels in, I'd say, the past 20 years in the WWE. But anyway, we'll see you next week, everybody. Have a great week. Enjoy yourselves.